Religious principles based on devotional service. Rajaha, the mode of passion. Tamaha, the mode of ignorance. Hanyat, destroy. Sattva, of goodness. Ridehi, by the increase. Anuttamaha, the greatest. Ashu, quickly. Natsyati, is destroyed. Tat, of passion and ignorance. Mulaha, the root. He, certainly. Adharmaha, irreligion. Ubaye khate, when both are destroyed. So translation, religious principles strengthened by the mode of goodness destroy the influence of passion and ignorance. When passion and ignorance are overcome, their original cause, irreligion, is quickly vanquished. So you can repeat.
Religious principles
strengthened by the mode of goodness.
Destroy the influence
of passion and ignorance.
When passion and ignorance are overcome,
the original cause of religion
is quickly vanquished.
So there's no purport to this text. There's a purport to the next text. So we'll read text, the next text. Agamopa prajadisha kala karma chitanmacha jnanam mantrota sangskaro dashaite gunahetavaha. According to the quality of religious scriptures, water, one's association with one's children or with people in general, the particular place, the time, activities, birth, meditation, chanting of mantras, and purificatory rituals, the modes of nature become differently prominent. Very interesting translation here. So purport by His Divine Grace, actually by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The 10 items mentioned above possess superior and inferior qualities and are thus identified as being in goodness, passion, or ignorance. One can increase the mode of goodness by selecting religious scriptures in goodness, pure water, friendship with other persons in goodness, and so on. One should scrupulously avoid any of these 10 items that may be polluted by an inferior mode of nature. So, Om Magana Timidanda Shaganandjara Shilakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, as Krishna states in the Gita, Karnam Guna Sangasya Sadasad Janma Jan Ishu, that the reason we're entangled in this material world, the reason we're an illusion, the reason we think we're the body, the reason we forget that we're servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The reason is guna sangha. Sangha, of course, means, as all of you know, association. You know, like there's satsangha, which means association with pure devotees, and there's asatsangha. As Lord Chaitanya says, asatsangha jaga e vaishnavachar. When Lord Chaitanya is giving the qualities of a devotee, he said, asatsanga tyag e vaishnavachar, which means, tyag means to renounce, and asatsanga means those things that are not eternal or spiritual. Asatsanga tyag e vaishnavachar, which is the achar of a vaishnava, the behavior of a vaishnava. Avoiding bad association, in common English. So, in this particular verse, in the verse I just quoted, Asatsanga Chaga Vaishnavachar, which is Bengali rather than Sanskrit, he was referring to non-spiritual things. In other words, give up things that aren't spiritual and associate with things that are spiritual, because sat means that which is or that which is eternal. Like we see in the Bhagavad Gita also, what Nasato Vijite Bhavo, Nabhavo vijite sataha ubaya drishtavantas tvanyas tatva darshavi. That the sages say that those things which are eternal, which continue to exist, are real, and those things which have a beginning and end are unreal. So in the verse Lord Chaitanya quoted, or cited, he's saying, don't associate with things that are non-eternal, or with people who are attached to things that are non-eternal, but associate with sadhusanga, associate with satsanga, you know, with eternal things. However, in this particular verse that we're reading today, it says that you should associate with the mode of goodness, which is actually, at least the material mode of goodness, is not actually eternal. It's bewildering, conditions one to a sense of happiness. Just like sometimes I see on Facebook, anyone's heard of Facebook before? No. That someone, even a devotee, they're writing things about the mode of goodness. Like, oh, today I walked on the beach was so nice. Today I smelled the flower, it wasn't offered to Krishna, of course, and it was so nice. Today I saw a sunrise, it was so nice. Today I saw a Bollywood movie. No, that's not the mode of goodness. But, I'm just kidding. Today, so we find that devotees many times are attached to the mode of goodness. I mean, because most of the devotees I know, unfortunately, they're not that attached to the mode of goodness. But sometimes, isn't it? Like they go to Hare Krishna raves. So we find that sometimes devotees get bewildered by this mode of goodness. Oh, they can't hear in the kitchen? Okay. Definitely want Maharani to hear. She can hear? Okay. So, we find this quite often, especially on Facebook, where devotees write about, mode of goodness experiences. Or devotees may have a tendency to join different organizations that promulgate the mode of goodness. Something like
PETA. A lot of causes. Different causes out there.
Causes, like PETA, people for ethical treatment of animals, vegetarian causes like that. So devotees have this tendency. So that's not necessarily bad. I'm not decrying that or criticizing that. Because here Krishna states that one should cultivate the mode of goodness to get rid of the mode of passion and ignorance. It's just that it's the lower stage. I mean, we have to be able to understand what is the lower stage and what's the higher stage. In the Vedic literatures, there's different stages. For example, Krishna here refers to scriptures, actually. It's interesting. And the different modes of nature. We're not criticizing scriptures that deal with the different modes of nature. But they're for, when they say, different slokas for different folks. Like you have the Puranas. There's 18 Puranas. And six, divide by three. Six are for people in the mode of ignorance. Six are for people in the mode of passion. And six are for people in the mode of goodness. And of course the Bhagavad Purana is for those who are in Shudashatra. It's called the Amala Purana. Amala Purana means, or it's also called the Paramahansa. Sangita means the pure Amala. Mala means like some dirt. And Amala means without any dirt, without any impurities. Anyabhi Lashita Shunyam. Devoid of anything else other than pure devotional service. The other Puranas, generally, they have other things in them. And, of course, at the same time, we don't want to spend too much time on the other Puranas or criticize the other Puranas, because most of the other Puranas have been changed throughout the ages. They don't come down in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. Nowadays, of course, we find that devotees become very sophisticated. They quote from the Vishnu Purana, Matsya Purana, Kurma Purana, this Purana, that Purana, and they do the reading and the quoting on their own rather than quoting from our acharyas. So who knows whether what they're quoting is actually from the original Purana or not? I mean, you hear all these stories. I mean, some of them, some of them are pretty far out, and some of them I don't even accept, because they're not actually, you don't really know that it's called, you know, epistemology. How do you know what you know? You don't really know whether it's coming from a bona fide source, whether the Quran is the original form. I'll give you one example. There's one story devotees are very fond of telling. It's a story that Prahlad, they tell the story of why Prahlad Maharaj became Prahlad Maharaj. You heard the story before? Well, it's from one of the Puranas, but I don't accept the story because it's not, we don't know whether that version of the Puranas is correct. It hasn't come in disciplined succession. And it encourages a karmakanja mentality. Many of the stories do. That's the story where Prahlad Maharaj, in previous birth, had an argument with his girlfriend. Remember the story? Some of you may remember the story. It was an argument with his girlfriend on the Shringa Chaturdasi, therefore because he had an argument, he was so angry with her that he stayed up all night and fasted, because you know, when you argue and yell at someone, you don't want to eat. Some people eat more when they argue. I've seen that too, but at least the story is that he stayed up all night on Nrisimha Chaturdasi, and therefore he became assiduated of the great Prahlad Maharaj. I'm sure you've heard that story before. So that encourages like a ritualistic mentality, because really Krishna says Bhakti Mama Vijananti Yavanyas Chasmi Tatvataha. I mean, certainly by doing things accidentally, you can get some advancement in piety. Just like, you know, we have that also, that philosophy in Krishna consciousness, that if you chant the Hare Krishna mantra meaning something else, you know, that's, you get, you know, free of all your karma, but you don't get pure devotional service.
Because
Agyata Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti, it's called. I mean, certainly, but you're not chanting the pure name. Just like, we have the story of Ajamil from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He chanted the Namavash, not meaning Krishna. He meant his little baby son, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And as a result, he got liberated from getting tortured by the Yamadutas. However, he didn't get pure devotional service at that stage. Basically, later on, he had to go to a holy place, I believe it was Bhadrika Ashram or somewhere, and perform devotional service under the direction of a pure devotee. Then he got pure devotional service. You understand? You know, pure devotional service only comes from association with a pure devotee, hearing the pure name, the Shuddha Nama. It doesn't come from just doing some ritualistic thing. I mean, it's interesting also, there was one book, Akadasi, that was published many years ago by someone who's no longer a member of ISKCON. And it also encouraged all this ritualistic stuff, quoting from different Puranas. I don't know if you remember that. I'm not going to mention it. No, it's not bona fide. What I'm saying is that it encourages a ritualistic mentality. Because Krishna says, only by devotion am I to be known. What does devotion mean? Devotion means that simply desiring Krishna's pleasure and not desiring anything, your own pleasure. Oh, there's more money. The boss lady. So not desiring anything else other than Krishna. Yambi lashita shunyam jnana karma navatam. I mean, there's so many verses like that. Bhakti mama vijananti. Krishna is only by devotion could I be known, not by rituals. Anyway, so the point I'm making, I don't want to get too far afield in this whole discussion. The point I'm making is that many of these Vedic literatures have been changed dramatically. Things added, things taken away, or things just like adjusted in the Vedic literature. Therefore, we have the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita and the works of the Goswamis. And in the case where these devotees, where great acharyas have quoted from other literatures, then we accept that. So, for example, Madhvacharya, he quotes from the Mahabharata, but he also says a lot of the Mahabharata has been changed or corrupted. So, and when there is some difference between a Mahabharata story and a story in the Bhagavatam, we obviously accept the Bhagavatam version because the Bhagavatam has been passed down in disciplined succession. So that's the real point. Okay, so, but we do have different literatures in different modes of nature, or meant for people in different modes of nature. You know, you have, like you have the Shiva Purana, who's meant for people in the mode of ignorance. Because Krishna is very merciful, he understands that people are in different modes. So therefore he has to give them some gradual process for elevation. You know, if you're in the mode of, I mean, how many times have we gone up to someone in the mode of ignorance and said, you know, stop it, just chant Hare Krishna, and usually it doesn't work, they just get angry at you. Upadesho hi murkanam prakopayana shanti. If you give a fool good instruction, they just get angry, right? I mean, we're not, or I'm not Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who can take jagais and madais and get them dancing in 1 minute. You know, if I go into a bar and start preaching the jagais and madais directly, if I preach directly, they'll probably, you know, hit me over the head with a pot or a bottle. And chase me like they did Haridas Thakur and Lord Nityananda. But I won't be capable of... well, I can run faster than they can. But I won't be capable of turning them into pure devotees, getting them to make a bathing guide on the bank of the Ganges, and, you know, crying in ecstasy, you know, swooning in ecstasy. You know, I'm not capable of doing that. I'm not capable of getting animals to chant and dance like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in the Jarakanda forest. So we have to realize that when we're dealing with people in different modes, we give them instructions in accordance with them. Even Prabhupada did that. He said, look, if one is a drunkard, they can chant Hare Krishna between each gulp of liquor. Of course, that instruction is not for all of you. It's not that, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, here's a Prabhupada said story, you know. So, you know, chant Hare Krishna each time you drink liquor between each glass or shot or whatever people do with liquor. You know, so even Prabhupada had different instructions according to different people, different modes of nature. Which is interesting. What to speak of the Vedic literatures. So we don't decry those instructions, but those instructions may not be for us. Instructions for us obviously are a little bit higher nature. However, we should recognize that we are influenced to a certain extent in the modes of nature right now, and we should be honest insofar as our own position in devotional service. I mean, I find quite a bit of dishonesty. And not only dishonesty, it's not deliberate dishonesty, it's actually people are not even aware they're dishonest, or there's a disconnect between their actual level of realization and what they think they are at. There's a real disconnect. I mean, for example, I was just in at Govardhan. You know, I stay at Govardhan for some time, and then I visit Radhakund. And there's quite a few Western devotees who live at Radhakund right now, being influenced by the Babaji's. And what these Babaji's generally do, in addition to criticizing our sampradaya, is they tell the devotees that they can realize their siddha deha, or their eternal spiritual body, by being told what their body is like in the spiritual world. That's called siddha pranali. Siddha pranali means you actually tell someone, hey, you're a gopi, you're a cow, you're a coward boy, you're a flute, you're Krishna's flute. Yeah, well, people do believe, because they want, you know, you want to think that you're better than you actually are. I mean, obviously, you want to think that, you know, hey, I've realized that I'm better. Actually, this is a whole competitive type spirit, that we want to think we're better than everyone else. We want to look down upon those poor ISKCON devotees, you know, those on reverence guys. Like there was a story with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. How one person came to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj and criticized Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, I don't want to go to Mayapur because, you know, Mayapur has these people who are on the on reverence platform like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, yeah, generally we do want to feel that we're better than we actually are. I mean, like one devotee said to Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. So we want to feel we're the most something. Even if it's the most fallen. Because Prabhupada said, you're not the most anything. So therefore, when we go to Radhakunda, the Babaji's understand that, you know, these Western devotees, they have this false ego, you know, they're gullible. I actually have one friend who lives at Radhakunda. He's not a Babaji, and he's not a Western devotee. He's an Indian person. You know, a very nice devotee. He works in one of the temples there serving the deities. And he said, yes, the Babaji's, they just take advantage. I mean, he's an Indian. He's lived at Radhakunda his whole life. He's a Brajabasi. It was interesting, in Radhakunda, there's two types of people who live there. There's Bengalis and the original Brajavasis. Generally, the Babaji's and those who take advantage of the devotees, they're Bengalis. And the Brajavasis, they're, anyway, many, many generations, they're from Uttar Pradesh. I mean, they're living in Vrindavan or Rajamandala. So there's actually a difference, and there's a lot of conflicts, a little politics for you. There's actually a lot of conflicts between the two groups. And sometimes even fighting and violence between the two groups. So the Brajabasis, you know, they're not so enthusiastic about the Bengalis.
Anyway. Is it actually a corporate town?
Yeah. Well, yes, it's a corporate town in the sense that some of the Babaji's are the Mahants. In other words, they control everything there, and they have Gundas who work for them. Anyway, it's a little bit interesting political situation. What?
They're the mafia, not the Mahants.
There's mafia. Not all the Babaji's, but there's some who are actually, you know, really Krishna conscious. And we don't want to criticize anyone in particular, because even if someone is doing something bad in Vrindavan, at least they're living there and going to go back to Godhead. Or if they're actually breaking the principles, then they just become a nice monkey or hog or dog or something like that in Vrindavan. So, I mean, I even offer my obeisances to the dogs there, because they're great devotees. So, but anyway, my friend was telling me that many of the Babaji's, they wait for Westerners to come there to take advantage, because the Westerners are gullible. You know, and they can give them the Siddhadeya, you know, Siddha Pranali it's called, where you find out the Ekadasha Bhava, the 11 aspects of your personality. You know, you're a gopi, this is what your body looks like, this is what you dress like, this is your service for Radha and Krishna, etc. And people are doing that, and it's just an illusion. I mean, Prabhupada himself wrote this very interesting poem called Vrindavan Bhajan, where he criticizes this whole activity. Especially he criticizes what's called Nirjana Bhajan. I mean, just sitting down and just chanting and not engaging in any practical service for the mission. So I encourage you all to read this poem. It's called Vrindavan Bhajan. It's written in Bengali, but it's translated, of course, into English, for those of you who don't read Bengali. So, anyway, so they take it back. So devotees, the point is, they're not aware they're actually in the modes of nature. That's the point I'm making. They're not, you know, devotees are thinking, I'm transcendental. And then it causes a lot of problems in the movement, not only with the Babaji's and at Govardhan, but even in our own dealings with each other, we become rather callous sometimes with each other. We don't exhibit the compassion the devotees should exhibit towards each other, because we think we're more transcendental than we actually are. If you're actually transcendental, you're compassionate on all levels. If you think you're transcendental, then you become harsh with others. That's the difference. Because you're just like, you know, you're so transcendental, you think you're better than everyone else, and therefore you start to criticize others who may be struggling in their Krishna consciousness. So that's harshness that comes from thinking that you're too transcendental, and you're in the modes of nature. So in other words, getting back to the point of this verse, if one is influenced by the modes of nature, then certainly cultivating the mode of goodness is helpful, because it's a step up. It's not all in all, it's not the goal, and if you become conditioned, it's actually a deviation from the goal of Krishna consciousness. But at our particular stage, it's probably a very good idea to cultivate the mode of goodness, to eat food in the mode of goodness, to wake up early, because, you know, this is Brahma Muhurta, it's the time of the mode of goodness. Not to stay up late at night, because that's the time of the mode of ignorance and passion. Not to eat food in ignorance. Food that's tasteless, stale, decomposed, putrid meat. Or in the mode of passion. Devotees many times eat food in the mode of passion. Too much salt. Too much sugar. Too much spicy. They like hot peppers. I remember when I was a young devotee, there was two sannyasis who are no longer sannyasis, but they would cook practically hot pepper soup. And they would add a few little vegetables, hot pepper and ghee soup. I mean, really got the brahmacharis going on sankirtan, that's true. I mean, they were the... Anyway, it was Guru Kripa and Yashodhana. It really got people going like crazy. I mean, once you for breakfast, you have hot pepper soup with ghee in it. I mean, you're ready to go the whole day. Of course, you know, the first pretty lady you see, you'll probably chase after. Which happened quite a few times to the devotees. So much in the mode of passion. You know, sometimes we would ask, you know, what happened with so-and-so brahmachari? Oh, he's coming back tomorrow morning. So, and they would steal things too. They would actually steal it because they were in the mode of passion and ignorance. So it's food, association, music. Anyway, so we have to really be careful right now to cultivate the mode of goodness, even though it's not the goal, but at least it's a place from which we can jump off to Krishna consciousness from. In our relationships, you know, we have to cultivate the mode of goodness. Be very cautious about that. So we have to become aware of the different modes of nature. And this is what Krishna is advocating here. I mean, if you're a pure devotee, yes, you don't say cultivate the mode of goodness. A pure devotee can do anything. I mean, you have pure devotees doing amazing, you know, in our disciplic succession, when you have like Lord Nityananda doing things that are just like, huh? What's he doing? You know, throwing his clothes off and running around naked. But if you do that, that'll be ignorance. Like Prabhupada said when he went to the nudist colony to preach, it's just ignorance. You know, Prabhupada actually even found some of our devotees living in trees in the nudist colony. Yeah, Morningstar Ranch. But Lord Nityananda, he was sometimes in so much ecstasy, he'd just throw off his clothes. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had to take his own cloth and wrap Lord Nityananda. So the Lord Nityananda, you know, would be running around everywhere in front of everybody, completely naked. So for someone who's transcendental, you don't worry about the mode of goodness. But the point I'm making in class is we are not transcendental right now. So we better worry about the mode of goodness, cultivating the mode of goodness. This is the point that Krishna is making here in his instructions in actually text 3 and 4. Text 3 says, mode of goodness destroy the influence of passion and ignorance. When passion and ignorance are overcome, their original cause, irreligion, is quickly vanquished. Also in 4, the same thing is... He talks about the modes of nature being associated with the activities of religious scriptures, water associated with one's children, people in general, particular place, time, activities, birth, meditation, chanting mantras, and purificatory rituals. There's even rituals in different modes of nature. I mean, just like and just like in the French Quarter, there's people who do voodoo. They even have one disciple who's a voodoo queen.
I saw her recently. She's doing well. She's actually chanting around. She told me to tell you.
I want to see her. Yeah.
That she is chanting. I forget where she told me she lived. It's somewhere on the North Shore.
Oh, I see.
Maybe she'll be at the Rasa.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to see her. So, I mean, even she advertises on the internet that I owe all my knowledge to my guru, the Krishna Gosan. So some people criticize ISKCON, they take that I'm teaching her Buddha. What?
She comes to some of the third
classes. That's nice. So, anyway.
But she's no longer practicing that.
What?
Right?
Well, I guess it's her means of making money. Just like some people go to work selling cars, other people go to work selling voodoo. I mean, what can you do? You know, everybody has a job, right?
She's retired.
Oh, she's a retired voodoo. Well, that's good.
She used to work, it was like also with the tourist industry.
Yeah. What a nice mode of goodness thing to do, take people to cemeteries. Wow, what a... Anyway, I mean, everybody has to work a job. I mean, some people work calendar club now, right?
Yeah.
She was a single mother.
So, you know, people have to do what they can do to make a living in this Kali Yuga. I mean, you can't really criticize people unless they're eating these fish rags or doing things against regular principles. But, you know, people just have, and we have devotees who, what is her name? Chandrika, who like tells people's fortune on the phone or something like that.
It's like, I did, but Jack Kali is great.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, it's the way people make a living.
She makes good money.
Wow.
Maharaj, when you see Bhushaya next, you'll have to talk to him about the arrangement that we had for a while. When people come to me and ask me to do voodoo, I would send them to him, and he would teach them to chant mantras.
Oh, that's nice. So that. I mean, that's really our preaching, like Prabhupada said, you know, in like a pin, out like a plow.
I had a client who, I first sent a Krishna as a blood pleasure, and so he bought a Gita, and then he bought an entire set of
Bhagavatam.
Wow. Yay. Wow, see? That's great. That's great. I mean, one should work their job and then try to give people Krishna consciousness. I mean, in Kali Yuga, every job you work has some connection with modes of nature. You can't, unless you're a pujari, and then you're probably worshiping the deities for money. So, yeah, your credit cards, you're worshiping the deities, you know, my dear Radha Radha Kanta, please send money, da-da-da-da, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari, Swami Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Do you chant that, Yogendra? I think. Please, my dear Lord Nishingrave, kill people who don't like me.
You
better watch out. So I mean, any practically any occupation you have in Kali Yuga has some connection with modes of nature, but you purify it by offering results to Krishna. So even the ones of voodoo, people can purify that. And then you bring people to Krishna. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, any job where you're actually breaking the regulated principles is part of your job. I mean, we don't want devotees going out and selling marijuana. We don't want devotees going out and running supermarkets. And if they're doing voodoo, they shouldn't be biting off the head of chickens, which is what they do in voodoo. It's actually interesting. When we had our temple in Miami on Coral Way, I don't know if any of you remember that. There was a temple in Miami on Coral Way. We were surrounded by people from South America who wanted to get rid of us. So we would find chickens without their heads all around the property. And that's because they wanted to get rid of us. Finally it worked.
But eventually,
you got a bigger place. A better place, because it was more isolated. So, I mean, how can you glorify Chevrolets if you're a car salesman?
Huh?
How can you sell Chevrolets or Mercedes and glorify them if you're a devotee? I mean, you have a job. You have to sell insurance. You know people are going to die, but still you're selling insurance. So, every endeavor is covered by some sort of fault. And one has to maintain their family in Kali Yuga. I mean, if you just want to be like a simple Brahmin, just going out there saying, Hare Krishna, give me a donation for my family, it's not going to work. So you have to be practical, as far as I see. I mean, every job that you have has some sort of connection. I mean, even Prabhupada had the devotees selling incense, and in the 1960s and 70s, people bought incense to cover up the smell of marijuana smoke. Yeah. Yeah, and you had to sell, primarily you're selling to head shops, right?
A lot, but we would sell it everywhere, and it got so spread that people, you know, they'd go in the drugstore and buy their incense and go home and smoke their marijuana and stuff.
That's interesting. I mean, at that time, America was filled with head shops. Head shops means they would sell drug paraphernalia. And devotees would regularly go in there to to sell incense to head shops and other places like that. Of course, we don't break the regular principles. A good point. We don't sell meat, fish, or eggs, transport meat, fish, or eggs, or anything like that. We don't run the prostitution rings. We don't, we don't run gambling. We don't have a gambling casino in the temple. Of course, it might be good to make money. But we have a slot machine in it. Over the doorway.
Oh, my
God. Well, instead we have we have ATMs in our temple. Actually, all over North America, I was the first one to establish, you know, credit card machines in the temple where people could give a donation.
I still want to get one of those sometimes for the donation.
Well, I can tell you how to get it. Yeah, I can tell you how to get it, how to function, because we make $2,000 a month from ours in our temple. I mean, that's a lot of money, and it's just coming from the swiping machine. So anyway, so whatever occupation you have, there's some connection with modes of nature. But you have to be alert, and you can't give up. You shouldn't give up your duty. I mean, originally, Jayananda was driving a taxi to support the temple. And what happens when you're driving a taxi? You're transporting people who are drunk, people who are carrying meat with them. You can't say to your clients, you know, let me check your bags before you come in my taxi. So, I mean, anything you do in this world is connected. So we don't give up our particular activity, think it's all Maya. So an interesting point. But not meat, fish, or eggs or anything related. So any other questions or comments?
But isn't voodoo about sticking pins into little dolls so that the person dies or doing things to harm other people?
Yeah, I used to do that with devotees. Now, actually, I'll tell you a funny story about voodoo. That most of this stuff is actually based upon people's just belief. I tested that one time on a devotee. I had a lot of funny stories about voodoo. I told the devotee that I was very expert in voodoo before I joined the movement, and I was going to show him how expert I was. I said, I made believe I was chanting some mantras over a doll, and I said, "This is you. This doll." And I took a pin and stuck it in the doll, and he started to feel pain.
That's out of suggestion.
I know, and that's what voodoo is. I mean, it's all, most of these people, it's just auto-suggestion, it's just like power of suggestion, like that. And I don't take it that seriously. A lot of these different, even modern medical procedures, not modern, you know, new age medical procedures, are based upon the power of belief. You know, there's something called the placebo effect. You ever heard about that before? Mm-hmm. Placebo effect means that if you give people, I mean, one example is you give people, just inject them with just some saline solution, which means, you know, salt solution, water, and you tell them it's a miracle medicine, they'll get better 50% of the time. And there was a story I was just reading about, I mean, a real story, about a person who had like some sort of terminal cancer, and he was asking the doctor for this miracle medicine that the doctor knew didn't work. But finally the doctor said, "Well, let's try it, and I'll give you this medicine." And because he had a belief in it, he got better. The cancer disappeared.
Wow.
But then later on, this person read that this medicine never worked, and then the cancer came back.
Oh.
And he died. So there's a lot that has to do with psychology and belief. You know, the placebo effect is very, very strong. Very, very strong. Anyway, I don't want to get into... Oh, yeah, but sometimes people do have some of these powers in the mode of ignorance. In South America, I was simple president in Caracas, Venezuela, and one of the girls wanted to marry one of the brahmacharis. So she made a voodoo doll of him. And she didn't stick pins in him, obviously, because she loved him. So, but she would, you know, obviously only when you hate someone you stick pins in their doll. So she would carry this doll with her all, gave the doll the same name as the brahmachari. He carried the doll with her 24 hours a day, was kissing the doll, took the doll to bed every night, you know, like that, with the doll. Finally, you know, one day the brahmachari wakes up in a trance. And that's it, you know, next thing I know they're married. So that actually happens. I mean, I was a temple president. Another time there are certain like black magic powers. It's not all placebo. Another time there was a devotee on Sankirtan, and you know, in South America there's a lot of like voodoo and black magic. You can actually even go to a shop in downtown and buy shrunken heads sometimes and witchcraft stuff.
Ecuador is very famous.
Ecuador, yeah.
Because the natives and the African natives,
they do all those.
They do that, so they betray the enemy, and they say they're having a very unique recipe to shrink
heads.
So they become very little.
Yeah, they take the skull out, actually. There's a method to do that. I can show you how to do it later if you want. So you could actually buy a shrunken head, because I was in Ecuador, and I travel all over South America, you know, Brazil, Ecuador, Colombia, and so I'm quite familiar with everything. So anyway, there was a brahmachari at Sankirtan, and there's a voodoo lady who wanted to take him away for some reason, and she threw a lizard at him, you know, an enchanted lizard, and he started to follow her. And all the other brahmacharis had to tackle him to keep him from leaving. And so, you know, there is some voodoo stuff. So at least if one is a voodoo queen, they could use it for Krishna. Obviously, they shouldn't do illicit stuff or animal slaughter. But, you know, you can use your occupation for Krishna.
But that's the whole point. A voodoo is just to harm other people, isn't it?
Not necessarily. No. You can do it because you want to marry someone.
I find that's the most prevalent, is to bring a loved one to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they want to help someone or bring a loved one. I mean, usually people don't usually want to kill each other unless they're, you know, it's more practical to shoot them than use voodoo.
Oh,
we shouldn't do that either. But the point is, you know, mostly they're trying, you know, to make money or to get a loved one to love them or get their husband to stop running around with another girl.
Get well,
you know. I'm not advocating it. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying you should do it. But the point I'm making is that every occupation you have has some sort of fault in it. You know, whether it's selling incense, or running a calendar club, or selling cars. I mean, what are people going to use the cars for? Or driving a taxi? I mean, before I joined the movement, I used to drive a taxi. And you make most of the money by picking up drunk people. Because they're not aware of how big a tip they're giving. You know what I'm saying? I would make a deal with the bar owners that they would call me when they had a drunk person who couldn't drive. And they'd get some money, you know, the kickback, you know. You understand what I'm saying?
Isn't that a businessman?
How about being in the military or being a congressman?
Yeah, being a congressman. We have a devotee who's a congress lady. From Hawaii. And she has to deal with so many things that, you know, because they're not, you know, probably the opposite of Krishna consciousness. You know. So this is the point, you know, if one works in this world, I mean, one's a sannyasi is a different thing. But if one has to work in this world, one has to be practical, isn't it? Yeah?
Yeah, the congress lady that you were mentioning, I saw a clip on Facebook. I didn't know, I was wondering, is she initiated as a devotee or is she just an Indian pious person that is speaking on the soul? I was just floored when I...
Yeah, she's actually a devotee. She's a second generation devotee, Tulsi Gabbard. And she's a member of Siddhasarup's group, which is, anyway, Siddhasarup was initiated by Prabhupada, so, you know, she's a Hare Krishna devotee. And she was speaking at, I saw some of the videos too, she was speaking at different Hindu places like that. She's Krishna conscious. She's Krishna conscious. I mean, But, you know, she has to do things that are not directors to consciousness, which is part of life. You know, we can't have everyone living in the temple, because economically it's not going to work. You know, people have to be practical. You know, obviously if someone can run a restaurant like Mom Rami's doing, it's great. Prasadam. You just sell prasadam, right? No, but she also sells clothes. What do clothes have to do with Krishna consciousness? Fancy clothes, you know, the people are going to use, sometimes they'll use those clothes and do things that are not Krishna conscious. What's a Krishna conscious clothes? But what's Krishna conscious clothes? No, you don't sell many clothes. So they're not Krishna conscious clothes, they're clothes that encourage people to be more chaste, sattvic. If they were Krishna conscious clothes, they'd have the Maha Mantra written all over them.
Yeah, that's true. I want to speak a little bit about those movie things. Like, that devotee who's in New Orleans is not doing this bad thing. I see it from time to time.
That's good.
And then there is this blue doll called the wooden doll.
Yeah.
And people buy them, little ones. Someone came up with an idea of making blue karma doll. And it's very popular. Somebody bought it and bring it to me one.
Very good idea.
All kinds of beads. And everything, and it's a long time, and he said, good karma doll.
That's great. Like Prabhupada said, you can give people corn to tie and call them happy dolls. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, so
Lakshmi was selling happy dolls.
Well, I mean, for the temple, you know.
For the
movement. Yeah, but that is what everybody's doing.
Because,
and everybody's
because Prabhupada,
yeah.
We are supporting the temple too. It's like my husband. My husband is doing a job that it keeps him away from the devotees, from the family. But my husband spends his time driving, listening to the lecture of Rafa and chanting. And he, many times he told me, all those years of sacrifice in the Navy is paying now because I am giving my wife and my stepkids who are devotees, I am giving them the benefits of the military life. And in Bhushaya, like Mother Jayapani was saying, Bhushaya is not going to get into something that is, you know, in the mood of ignorance. Bhushaya is going to do it almost for fun. I mean, if you see Bhushaya wearing a turban and reading the tarot, I laugh. To me, it's almost a joke. And what he's doing is teaching to people to say mantras. He tell people to say mantras from the Bhagavad Gita and things like that. So it's really a matter of what Prabhupada said. This is Krishna consciousness. Which consciousness we are doing the activities. We are making money to support the temple and to support our as devotees.
Yeah, Prabhupada said a factory worker is as good as a sannyasi because he's working for Krishna. He's giving the results to Krishna. And, you know, in Bhushaya, he's driving a truck and listening to Krishna Katha all day long. It's fantastic. But you know, also, you have to understand that not that everything in the truck, it's not that Prabhupada's books are being transported from one side of the country to another. You know, he's carrying things that probably have nothing to do with Krishna. But that's his occupation. That's the point. You know, you give the results to Krishna, and Krishna purifies the occupation. Whatever that occupation is, unless, you know, it's breaking principles. We don't advocate breaking principles. But, you know, we could do... I remember also another interesting story about South America. We had devotees who went on Sankirtan who dressed like gypsies.
Yeah, we used to look like gypsies.
They would go out and set up a table with a crystal ball on Sankirtan and wear this, you know, turban, ladies, actually. And then they would tell people's future. And they'd say, you know, I see you're going to become Krishna conscious. Not directly, but they, and this book will change your life. And they would distribute so many books that way.
Well, of course, in America, we did the same for
it. The Prabhupada liked it. I mean, it got a little too wild after a while.
I have a godbrother who does magic tricks with cars.
Yeah.
Because he says, out there on the streets, you have to really compete to get people's attention. So you have to have a bag of tricks to stop them for a minute and say, do you have a minute? I've got a trick to show you, and then get them interested in the movie.
Yeah.
And you have to know who's a natural comedian.
He's a comedian, yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with these things. The devotees should do what they're good at for Krishna. I mean, it's a very simple thing. You know, if you can make millions of dollars being a voodoo queen, do it. Right? Just don't break principles, that's all. Yeah. Yeah, George Harrison. Yeah, I had one disciple who wanted to be a famous actor in Hollywood. And what he ended up being is one of the, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, you've heard of her name before? She did a Christmas story and he was one of the elves. This is very short. I don't know if any of you met him. His name is Gopal.
Yeah.
Gopal. So he became one of the elves. That was his biggest role ever. Well, he didn't become famous. So then he left Hollywood after being disappointed. Now he's back in North Carolina. But he still dresses up in Spider-Man outfits. Because he wants to be a superhero. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do. No, she goes out as a clown. Yeah, she goes out as a clown and entertains people in hospitals too, and she gets so much Lakshmi for Krishna. So, I mean, whatever you do, as long as it's not breaking the principles, you can do it for Krishna. I mean, it's of course that with sannyasis there's some restrictions. I mean, it's not that I should be going out and doing voodoo on the street. Yeah, there is some restriction. What sannyasis can do. Yes?
I have a question with reference to what made me think of doing this in the first place. Was that the Radha Damodar traveling and they would set up a fortune telling booth, and they, whenever someone would come in, they would say, "You're about to embark upon a spiritual journey." And then they sold the fortune for $10, and then one volume of the Bhagavad Gita was free. They charged for the fortune telling book was free.
That's right, amazing.
Prediction. And my Guru Maharaj, Jagannatha Maharaj, when he was here once, he was saying to sell the Gaurani Thai deities as wish dolls. And you wake the incense when you're making your wish.
That's wonderful. Yeah, so that's what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted these happy dolls. You know, you just, whatever you want, you chant this mantra in front of the deities, in front of the, which we're called the gold happy dolls. And they'll become devotees. Gornitai are very merciful. Actually, I have a whole stock of those happy dolls if anyone wants to order them. They're the plastic ones from Hong Kong. And I have a lot of them still. Because we were distributing a lot on the street. We had the devotees distributing a lot on the street. You know, the small ones in the gift store. Yeah, about this big. And they're gored and tied together. They're already dressed and everything like that. And they come in a little box with a... Yeah, a little box with a cellophane front on it. Yeah, transparent. So if anyone's interested, they can contact me. You know, we can do it. We can ship them. Because I have a stock in North Carolina. Okay, yeah? One more question.
I just want to glorify the devotee at Mother Sun.
Yeah.
I got to see her in action. I took her out a couple times in the landscape and our transportation. She let me come in and watch her in action. You know? So in one restaurant, she can go through the restaurant and she can either talk or not talk because she has a portfolio. And she's showing the adults while she's doing the balloons for the children.
Mm-hmm.
So she can not attract, well, she attracts attention to where she goes. But, she can do the silent routine. But she also likes to get them to chant Nitai,
yeah, and Gauranga. She has this whole chant like Nitai with Neat Tie. And Gauranga.
And it's very bold. She go in any restaurant and eventually they'll kick her out. And then she goes over to another place, business. then she'll kick her out, but she's bold year after year she's been doing this.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. And she collects money and she gives it to Krishna. And she herself lives very austerely. And she takes it. She's a very compassionate devotee. She was recently taking care of one of my disciples who's completely incapacitated, an older lady, and just doing it, you know, just taking care of her out of compassion. Very, very compassionate person. Okay, I think, yeah. Oh, you mean that, Oh, my God, don't remind me of that. Lochan Prabhu, he made this little statue of me. It was on the internet, you saw that. And I didn't want it. I mean, obviously, I looked at it and I freaked out.
Very nice.
It's not that I was going to put it on my altar. you know, worship myself. So, yeah, he made this out of gratitude because when his daughter was dying, I was spending a lot of time chanting for her every day and helping her remember Krishna. Finally, she went back to Godhead. So, his daughter's name was Rasapriya, a very nice devotee. And so he's very grateful. And then also he's experimenting with 3D printing. He has a 3D printer, which is a printer that prints three-dimensional objects. I don't know if anyone's heard about that before. He has a scanner, like he can scan you, and he has a, you know, anyway, it's a software-based thing. And then he has a printer you can just put and print a little U in his printer. It's interesting. No, it's plastic. It's plastic. It prints in layers. One layer after another. So he printed this building and he painted it and he gave it. And I just freaked out because, you know, anyways, you can see a little image of yourself. Yeah. I was thinking maybe I could make money selling it, but. And anyway, I didn't give it to my mother. And I gave it to one of my disciples. The whole bag. You don't like to see a three-dimensional statue of yourself. I mean, hopefully we don't have that much ego. When I was young, my father had a picture made of himself that was 20 feet tall. And he had it posted on the wall of his house. You know, had a very high ceiling. 20 feet tall with his dog. Yeah, and then the funniest thing is my stepmother, that means the person my father married, was a exotic dancer. You know what an exotic dancer is? It's called a belly dancer in common language. And so she had a life-size statue of herself at the entrance of their house in her costume. So I come in the door. I come in the door of the house and there's this lady with the castanets and not exactly dressed basically. So, but anyway, we don't like to have statues of ourselves. So anyway, Lochan did that out of devotion. I mean, basically he was experimenting with this 3D technology. It's pretty amazing. Because Lochan Prabhu is famous. He made all the Prabhupada deities. You know, the Prabhupada deity you have here. Yeah. Yeah, you can print out the.
That, Lochan, it would make the resin Prabhupada.
Yeah. Your same like Lochan. He's a famous sculptor too. He made the official bust of Ronald Reagan after Ronald Reagan, left his. Yeah, I mean he's an amazing sculptor. Amazing. He's the best, even amongst the non-devotees or devotees. He's the best sculptor I've ever seen. Artist. I mean, his whole. Amazing person. Anyway, so that was.
I saw on the internet, and as soon as I saw, I said, oh my God, it's Maharaj, this Krishna Swami. The likeness is.
It's exact. It's exact, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, I was going to stick pins in it, but. Acupuncture pins, yeah. I mean, it's too freaky to see it. At least for me, I don't like that.
The devotees here sometimes do things like that. We make all these figures for the Govardhan Hill, so this year they made Jayantakamara.
Yeah, I mean, it's all right out of devotion. But generally, you do wait until someone has left this world before you make... I mean, Prabhupada was a little bit different. But generally, you do wait until someone's left this world before you make a deity of them or an image of them. Generally, you do that. I mean, there's exceptions. With Ramanujacharya, when he left, he was getting ready to leave this world. He had them make a deity of him, and then he breathed onto the deity. Interesting story. And he said, from now on you can worship this deity as me. And that deity is there in Srirangam today.
Oh, so it's the deity, it's not really his, like, samadhi body.
No, his body is also there. That's the body. That's the body. The deity is in front of the body.
Okay.
Like if you go to Srirangam, you'll find his body there, which is all wrapped in, you know, herbs and everything like that, is sitting there with his danda. And then in front of the body is the deity. And Srirangam. Anyone been there and seen that?
Yes.
You've seen that. Very interesting. Very interesting. You know, the original body of Sripad Ramanujacharya is there. They're still growing. They're still growing. It's amazing. I mean, that's also done in the Catholic tradition. They also have the popes. If you go into the Vatican, anyone here has been to the Vatican? No one's even been to the Vatican. Even the Vatican. The popes are lying there. Many of the popes are lying there in state in the Vatican itself, in St. Peter's. And of course they do have these masks over their faces, so you can't see the faces, but you know, their bodies are. So there's some recognition that when someone is on a high spiritual platform, then the body is spiritual.
They also have those monasteries where they keep the bones of the
Oh yeah, recently they were taking out some of the bones of St. Peter.
Oh, really?
And they're going to put them on display. The Vatican is doing that. I was just reading about that yesterday. Anyway, interesting stuff about the bones. Those bones shall rise again. Okay, I think it's time to end. So
a couple of new people here. We have Jonathan in the back. He's a worker on organic farms. He's visiting me for a couple of weeks.